must be shielded from conflict at all times, stressing any attack on healthcare facilities and their staff is a gross violation of international humanitarian law. The Israeli regime continues pressing ahead with its aggression against Lebanon, killing and injuring more civilians. The regime blew up dozens of homes in the southern town of Odessa using 400 tons of explosives. Blasts were so strong it triggered earthquake alerts across northern occupied Palestinian territories, and it comes after the Israeli regime killed three journalists in the south of Lebanon. The country has filed a complaint to the UN High Commissioner for Human Rights over that attack, which was one of the deadliest against the media since the regime began its genocidal onslaught on Gaza last year. Meanwhile, Israeli occupation forces have admitted at least seven of their soldiers were killed across the Lebanese border, raising the military death toll to 17 occupation forces in 48 hours, and 61 occupation force soldiers were also injured in the last day. Lebanese resistance movement Hezbollah has carried out fresh retaliatory operations against the Israeli regime and in defense of the civilians of Lebanon. Hezbollah successfully hit the Nowra base east of the northern occupied city of Afula using a squadron of drones. It also targeted Israeli troops and settlements and bases with rockets and missiles in both occupied Palestinian territories and along the southern Lebanese border area. Resistance also announced the bombing of Sha'ar Yashuf settlement and the targeting of two barracks. The retaliatory operations come as the Israeli regime's unrelenting air raids on Lebanon continue raging on, killing and injuring thousands of Lebanese civilians. At least 18 people have been killed in Gaza, in northern Gaza residential area of Jabalia. That's 18 Palestinians killed by the Israeli regime. As soon as we get the story developed, we'll get it out to you accordingly. Meanwhile, we're going to swing over now to our Beirut correspondent, Mariam Saleh, for the latest when it comes to Hezbollah's retaliatory operations against the Israeli entity and Israel's aggression against the Lebanese people. Hello, Mariam. Well, what could you share with our...
Well, the latest that we have from Israeli strikes, we have another strike early this morning that led to the martyrdom of at least six people in the area of Jbeit Majayun. And that was an area that had not been targeted heavily by the Israelis lately. And it seems the Israelis seem to be picking out of sometimes areas that are even deemed by some people as perhaps safe. And some even displaced people are living in that vicinity. We still do not have the identity of those people who were killed in that strike specifically. Of course, we'll be following that story to know who those six martyrs are. And we also know that the paramedics have been under attack constantly, especially after they go to try to have some rescue efforts or to lift the rubble. There, they come under attack from Israeli drones sometimes, from other Israeli raids in order to perhaps stop all efforts to lift the rubble and remove the martyrs from underneath. You heard about also the strikes in Odessa. They were so strong to the extent that people in the surrounding and even towards the city of Sidon thought that there was actually an earthquake because of the extent of the damage and the amount of explosives that were used and bombs that were used. This also, Lebanon has said, will add to the various complaints that they will be filing against the Israelis, because this also interferes with issues related to the natural disasters course and the measurements of natural disasters. This could also lead perhaps later on to the disruption of the natural course of the environmental issues. Of course, we've seen the attacks on green spaces that continues as well. Hezbollah has also vowed that they will continue their retaliations against the Israelis in defense of Lebanon, and retaliation for the massacres and the killing of civilians in Lebanon, as well as in Palestine. Yesterday, Hezbollah issued a very interesting, actually, video and warning to these settlers in some 25 different kibbutz areas, calling on them to evacuate the area because their settlements have been used by the Israeli military, which is launching an aggression on Lebanon. And Hezbollah said this makes them a legitimate target, that those kibbutz have become a legitimate target for the resistance in Lebanon since they are being used by the Israeli military to launch their attacks on Lebanon. Hezbollah also began today their operations, a strike on a military industrial site, specifically the UDBAT industrial site in for military automotive industries in the southeast of Aqaba. That was the first operation for Hezbollah. They launched this attack using bomb-laden UAVs. But Hezbollah yesterday had, of course, various strikes on areas not only near the border against the forces that are mobilizing at the border, but also against various bases, like in Hatsur. They also launched a drone attack in the Houda and the Afuni region, which is considered also very significantly a strategic area for the Israelis. The Sharava post was under a very large barrage attack by Hezbollah as well. The elite area, the elite military base also was met with a large barrage of quality rockets.
All right, Mariam, thank you for the update. Stay safe. We'll talk to you soon. Mariam Amsala joining us from southern Lebanon. Meanwhile, the Israeli forces have gunned down more Palestinians as the regime continues its violent raids on cities and towns across the occupied West Bank. Israeli forces shot dead 29-year-old Issam Jamil Odeh in the city of Tukaram. The young man was killed after Israeli soldiers launched an assault on residential buildings with heavy gunfire and explosives. Another Palestinian in his early 20s has also succumbed to wounds that he sustained after being shot by occupation forces in Qalqilya. He passed away a short time later in an area hospital. Latest acts of violence underscore ongoing oppression and aggression faced by Palestinians, with over 700 killed since October last year in the occupied West Bank alone. Our Ramallah correspondent Nakahama joined us earlier to give us more details on Israel's fresh raids across the occupied West Bank.
Israeli raids, the IOF raids over here in the West Bank, have left two Palestinian dead until this moment. One in Tukaram, who was actually surrounded and fired upon. 20 missiles, 20 energy missiles, were fired upon Islam Houdeh, 29 years old, to make him surrender, but he did not surrender. And later to that, his body was detained by the IOF forces, who were raiding the Tulkarem area and Tulkarem refugee camp area from the early hours of this morning. And the same attack left two Palestinians injured in live ammunition in their legs, and they were hospitalized in the city in Thabet Thabet Hospital. Also in a nearby area called Azun in the town of Qalqilya, the Palestinian Sabri Ahmed was killed near the separation wall with six directed live ammunition to his body while he was in the area of the separation wall near in the village of Azun. He was announced to be dead immediately and was taken to a hospital in Qalqilya.
President Masoud Pezeshkian says Iran will give a measured and prudent response to any foolish act against the country. Pezeshkian made the comment on X after Israel's aggression against the Islamic Republic. He said enemies must know Iranians will fearlessly defend their country. Pezeshkian also expressed condolences over the martyrdom of four Iranian army personnel in this attack. Israel's air raids targeted positions in Tehran, Khuzestan, and Ilam provinces. Iran's armed forces said a significant number of missiles were intercepted and aggression caused limited damage. Iran's parliament speaker says a response to Israel's aggression against the country is sure to come, but will be carried out after taking all considerations into account. Mohammad Bagher Ghalibaf told the chamber Iran is entitled to a response under the UN Charter. Ghalibaf also praised Iranian air defense forces for their successful interception of the Israeli missiles. He said the regime suffered another defeat by its desperate attacks on Iran. The speaker further said comparison between the second Operation True Promise by Iran and Israel's attacks clearly demonstrate the deterrent power of the Iranian armed forces. Meanwhile, Iran has called on the UN chief and the Security Council to strongly and unequivocally condemn Israel's aggression against the country and demonstrate major violations of law will not go unanswered. Iran's Foreign Minister Abbas Araghchi made the call in a letter addressed to the UN chief Antonio Guterres and UN bodies. letter call for a Security Council meeting to address a severe violation and unlawful action and ensure accountability. The letter said the Zionist regime's illegal and aggressive actions constitute serious violation of the sovereignty and territorial integrity of Iran. Said the regime's actions constitute a grave threat to international peace as well and security and further destabilize an already fragile region. Said Tehran reserves an inherent right to legal and legitimate response to these criminal attacks at the appropriate time. Islamic resistance in Iraq says it's carried out fresh anti-Israel operations hitting targets inside occupied territories. The group carried out two attacks on Israeli vital targets in occupied Golan Heights with what is called qualitative drone operations. It also carried out attack on an Israeli military target in occupied city of Aqqa using drones. The group also carried out another attack in the Jordan Valley on an Israeli target. Group said all these operations are carried out in support of the Palestinian and Lebanese people, and it also vowed to press ahead with these operations with increased intensity. In recent months, the group has also carried out a number of operations at U.S. bases in Iraq and Syria over Washington's unbridled support for Israel's genocide in Gaza. In the U.S., voters head to the polls on the 5th of November with neither major presidential candidate offering a platform of peace. Both the Democrat and Republican candidates have positioned themselves as full-throated war hawks in West Asia. Rami Mazahiri has your story out of Washington, D.C.
The presidential election campaign in the United States is nearing its end, but with no lessening of warmongering rhetoric from both candidates. The outgoing administration of Joe Biden has effectively joined Israel's multiple wars and attempted genocide in Gaza. His party's candidate for president, Kamala Harris, and the Republican candidate, ex-President Donald Trump, have both seemingly tried to outdo each other in bellicose rhetoric towards Iran, Gaza, Lebanon, and elsewhere in the region.
Regardless of what the U.S. government says, be the administration Democrat or Republican, real peace is not at all in their interest. Because we have to always remember that the reason why the U.S. supports Israel is because Israel acts as an outpost of U.S. imperial interests in the Middle East. So the only reason why, in the case of the Biden administration, they pretend to want peace is just it's an acknowledgement of how strong the anti-imperialist movement has been and how strong the movement for Palestine has been in this country. But it's all political theater. It's all smoke and mirrors.
Amid record inflation, major dissatisfaction with both candidates, widespread fears of continued election-related violence and other issues, with Harris promising to continue Biden's policy towards Israel, many voters don't see any good choices when it comes to foreign policy in Southwest Asia either. The West has been stunned by the timidity and ineffectiveness of Israel's U.S.-aided missile attack on Iran. Many Americans say they aren't surprised by the attack.
I believe that we have been going after Iran for a very long time. Israel has as well. They've killed their scientists. They literally assassinated their scientists in Tehran. But we've also, the United States has had Iran in our crosshairs for decades. And I know that you probably read Condoleezza Rice, Donald Rumsfeld, Dick Cheney's National Security Doctrine that said Saudi Arabia is the gateway, Iraq is the stepping stone, and Iran is the ultimate prize. They have been trying to seize Iran ever since the Shah fell.
Unlike in 2008 or 2016, neither candidate is even suggesting that Washington break with its longtime policy of war over diplomacy. Promoting war in Southwest Asia may be the one policy area where the two main candidates differ the least. Rami Mazahiri, Washington, D.C.
And that's it for your latest, everyone. Thank you for joining us here on World News.
A diverse range of programs. Spirituality. Youth. Whoa. Eastern Tales. Roundtable Discussions. Culture. Politics. All produced by IRIB English Radio.
Tell about yourself.
Abhay Rikshmanandi from India.
I was born actually in London, England.
I'm a journalist by profession.
I'm 20 years old and I'm a student of physics. My dad, who taught me the art of life.
Listeners Special.
In the name of God, the All-Compassionate, the All-Merciful. Salam, dear listeners, and warmest greetings to you all. Welcome to another edition of Listeners Special Program on this beautiful Sunday, October 27th, 2024. I'm Atefer Fani, hosting this program today. As you may know, Listeners Special is a Sunday program where your views are presented through your emails, your letters, and your messages. So please contact us and tell us what you think about our programs. Tell us which program or programs you like the best. And if you have any message for our listeners around the world, you can record your voice, send it to us, and get your voice heard in this program. Remember, Listeners Special is your program. It's your views that are important. Welcome back. This is Listeners Special Program, and here we've received reception reports from around the world. Also, we've received emails, which I mentioned some of your names here, and later during the program, I will read these emails. Mohammad Khaku from the U.S., one of our old and regular listeners, has sent us a piece of email regarding the world developments. And Malik Alabachaya from Pakistan, one of our old and regular listeners, has sent us a piece of email talking about, actually, IRIB English Radio programs. Many thanks for your support and commitment to IRIB English Radio. So, after a short break, I will be back with you talking about a very special cave in Iran. Stay tuned. Caves are one of the most famous and mysterious nature's attractions. Wonders hidden under the roofs and between the walls. Every cave has a story to tell, and what it has seen and what it has went through. And inside each could be a different world. One of these caves is good old Ali Sadr Cave. Whether you live in Iran or you're planning an adventurous trip to Iran and you're passionate about nature and call yourself a nature lover, Ali Sadr Cave is waiting for you. Well, after reading one of your emails, I will talk about this great cave in western Iran. Malik Alabachaya from Pakistan says, Radio Department English Service, dear sir or madam, IRIB English radio programs are broadcast by many international radio stations to cater to a global audience. These programs serve as a platform for listeners around the world to stay updated on news, current affairs, and cultural topics in English, regardless of their native language. The primary focus of these programs is often to provide educational content, global news, and insights about the country broadcasting the program. One of the major objectives of English language programs on international radio is to promote cultural diplomacy. Countries use these platforms to share their values, traditions, and viewpoints with an international audience, fostering better mutual understanding and cooperation. These programs often feature segments on politics, economics, science, and technology, as well as music, literature, and other aspects of culture. For many listeners, these English language broadcasts serve as a valuable learning tool. People learning English as a second language find them useful for improving their language skills while staying informed about global events. Overall, English language radio programs are a vital resource for connecting people across borders. They allow listeners to explore global perspectives, gain insights into other cultures, and improve their language skills all through the medium of radio. Kindly post me literature regards Malik Alabochai from Pakistan. First of all, salam and warm greetings from Tehran, the capital of the Islamic Republic of Iran, to you, Malik Alabochai from Pakistan. Many thanks for writing to IRIB English Radio. And what you described was right. Thank you very much. Please accept our EQSL as confirmation to this email. We wish you all the best, and we are looking forward to hearing from you very soon. After a short break, I will be back with you. This is Listeners Special, and we were talking about Ali Sadr Cave in western Iran. Nestled deep within the Zagros Mountains of western Iran lies the extraordinary Ali Sadr Cave. This natural wonder, located near the village of Ali Sadr in Kabudar Ohang County, has captivated visitors for centuries with its otherworldly beauty. Stretching for an impressive 11 kilometers, Ali Sadr is one of the world's largest water-filled caves. Although its full extent remains unexplored due to its complex network of tunnels and chambers, the accessible 2 kilometers offer an unforgettable adventure. Geologists have determined that the cave's formation dates back to the Jurassic period, making it millions of years. Wow, such a long time. Over time, water has carved intricate passageways and adorned the walls with stunning mineral formations. The cave's unique ecosystem, coupled with its historical significance as a potential shelter for early humans, adds to its allure. Well, it's wonderful. I will talk about it more, but after a short break, I will read one of our listeners' emails, Muhammad Khaku from the U.S. Welcome back. As I said, Mohammad Khaku from the U.S. has sent us a piece of email. Of course, it's such a long email, but I have chosen some part of it to read for you. It's about, actually, it's about the world developments, about what is happening in the region, in the West Asia region, in Gaza and Lebanon. Mohammad Khaku, our old and regular listener from the U.S., says, "The conflict in Gaza and Lebanon is a point of reflection, the likes of which our generation and, frankly, no one in human history has seen such a genocide carried out while nations that proclaim themselves champions of human rights remain silent. The first point of reflection is that for the first time in over 75 years, the flights of Palestine have garnered global attention, shedding light on the history of colonial settlers, the Balfour Declaration and the Nakba. Former colonial powers such as Portugal and Belgium have recognized that occupation and land confiscation do not constitute justice and must be dismantled. Support for Palestine has emerged from South Africa, which has brought Israel before the International Court of Justice, ICJ, the United Nations, and garnered backing from numerous European countries, which was never imagined. The second point is that for the first time in its history, the United Nations has explicitly and unequivocally, in its harsh terms, condemned occupation. However, the UN was ostensibly established to protect superpowers and colonial regimes, which is a rationale behind the veto power. The third point is that before October 7, Muslim and Arab regimes were on the verge of signing the Abraham Accords to facilitate and expedite trade, tourism, and daily flights from Israel, which are now on permanent hold. The fourth point to ponder is that the BDS movement has been so robust and effective that it has led to an unprecedented situation where several Fortune 500 companies have declared bankruptcy, downsized their workforce, and witnessed their stock values drop for the first time in history. The effectiveness of the BDS movement is phenomenal, and if a billion-plus Muslim in force and practice, we will soon liberate Palestine. Sadly, oil embargo by Muslim countries could have prevented the genocide." Well, it has many paragraphs, what Mohammad Khaku from the U.S. has written, and it was great. Yes, it was correct. And what you mentioned in your email, Mohammad Khaku, was the effectiveness of the BDS movement, which is boycott, divestment, and sanctions movement against the Zionist regime goods and products, which is very effective. We have seen the effect of this movement in recent days. Different products which the Zionists have invested in, their rates, their profits have plummeted, and it's, as you said, the effectiveness of this movement is very phenomenal. And if a million plus Muslim in force and practice, we will soon liberate Palestine, it's true. Well, Mohammad Khaku from the U.S., many thanks for writing to IRA English Radio and listeners, a special program. We wish you all the best. A piece of EQSL will soon be sent to you as confirmation to this email. We are looking forward to hearing from you very soon. Welcome back. One of the most distinctive features of Ali Sadr Cave is its accessibility by boat. Visitors can embark on a mesmerizing journey through the underground waterways, marveling at the towering stalagmites that adorn the ceiling and floor. It's wonderful. I have seen the photos. Unfortunately, I didn't have the chance to visit the cave, but I have seen the photos. It's marvelous. The play of light on the water creates a truly enchanting atmosphere. Recognized as a national treasure, Ali Sadr Cave has earned its place among Iran's most popular tourist destinations. Whether you are an adventure seeker or simply appreciate the beauty of nature, this hidden gem is sure to leave a lasting impression. the view inside the cave is quite unique, and its weather is cool in summer and warm and pleasant in winter. Yes, that's it. That's Iran. Some measures have been taken to increase the length of the waterways for boating as well as land routes, which have added new and beautiful views to the experience of visiting the cave. Moreover, around the cave, there are accommodation, tourism, and recreational facilities around the area. And also the possibility of mountaineering is provided in this area. Well, much left to talk about the Ali Sar cave, but time tells me we have to say goodbye to you. But before that, I just wanted to send my warm appreciations and gratitudes to those of you who have kindly sent us emails and reception reports from around the world, including Malik Alabachaya from Pakistan and Muhammad Kaku from the US. Many thanks for being with us. Please keep in touch with IRIB English Radio and listeners, a special program. We wish you all the best. God bless you and goodbye.
Dear listeners, your opinion is always important to us. We invite you to spend just a few minutes writing us a letter or sending us an email. We will be glad to hear from all of our listeners who have any questions or comments about any of our programs. Our postal address is IRIB English Service, P.O. Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran. You can also send us emails to englishradio@irib.ir. Our phone number is 0098-21-2201-3720. Thank you all for being with IRIB English Radio.
Us now from Ontario, Canada.
Now back to our story.
What is it in there?
We will be talking about this.
Let me bring in Leo Sazdi. He's a professor of international.
The Spotlight.
The Israeli regime has conducted an illegal attack against the Islamic Republic after about 3 weeks of Israeli regime officials claiming this will be such a severe attack that Iran won't know what has hit it. The opposite has occurred, an attack that was way below the severity of what anyone imagined, pale in comparison to Iran's operation to Promise 1 and 2. In this edition of The Spotlight, we will look at how this operation had one winner, not the Israeli regime, but Iran's defense shield. And as things stand, Iran has said that there are no limits to its determination to defend itself. Let me introduce our guest for this edition of The Spotlight. Masoud Shajar, chairman of the Islamic Human Rights Commission, joins us from London. Also joining us, Hossein Al-Bukhaiti, who is an activist and political commentator, who joins us from Sana'a. Welcome to you both. I'll start with you, Masoud Shajar. You have this regime, the Israeli regime, conducting an illegal attack against the Islamic Republic. It calls it Operation Days of Repentance. Putting the illegality aside, you have, based on some reports, Israeli officials who were in bunkers giving orders. And then you had the majority of Iranians who went to their balconies to see if there was anything happening, if they could see anything. There's a contrast there. And this really points to the less than severe operation that took place. Why did this operation fall so short of the Israeli rhetoric before it happened?
Well, really, I can't stop laughing when I think about it and what we witnessed last night. And, you know, vis-a-vis being illegal, what has this Zionist state has done that has been legal since its own creation? It's been involved in illegality, in sort of killing children, men, women, committing genocide, illegal occupation, you name it, they've done it, assassinations, and the list goes on and on. But, you know, at this 11th hour, it really is it's a joke. I mean, I can't stop laughing of all the jokes that is coming out of Iran since last night. You know, a bunch of kids on the rooftop, you know, sort of looking and trying to find a single Israeli rocket or attack. And it goes on and on and on. And even in this illegal entities, illegal occupying areas, people are joking about their own sort of so-called government and how pathetic this has been. I think what we need to really recognize here, and I think is very important, is that, you know, like any bully, that the bully in the school grounds, once it's exposed, once his power is being challenged, then, you know, the whole thing falls to pieces. And this is what we are seeing. This Zionist state have been bullying and taking sort of illegal action against the people in Gaza. You know, we need to recognize what Gaza was. Gaza was a big prison, and they have unleashed a sort of an armed forces against people in a sort of concentration camp. And they think they could get away with the same sort of bullying elsewhere. And now they've been challenged, I think, for first time in their lifetime. Indeed. They've been challenged, and they are facing, they're losing all credibility whatsoever.
Well, Hossein Abu Ghaiti, it doesn't take a specialist to understand what has happened when you put the videos next to each other. The Israeli illegal attack on the Islamic Republic and Operation True Promise the Second. You don't need to be a military analyst to see the severity and the successful operation that Operation True Promise was compared to the Israeli regime. I mean, when you had the Israeli Minister of Military Affairs saying the strike on Iran will make the world understand Israel's might, they will understand in Israel and elsewhere what your preparations have included in statements to the IOF regime forces, and Iran won't know what hit it. It falls pale. It doesn't even measure up to that. Do you think that that means that the Israeli regime was afraid of what type of retaliation then would entail?
This of course clearly that the Israeli regime was afraid to conduct a major attack, as they were warning that they will, as an example, targeted the Iranian oil infrastructure or nuclear facility. And at the end, what happened after the attack of 1 October from the Islamic Republic of Iran against the Zionist state of Israel, millions of Israeli settlers across occupied Palestine has went to shelters. But meanwhile, we've seen that this attack that was conducted against Iran by Israeli, we've seen that millions of Iranian people has gone to the street, to the roof, to see where that attack was hit. And it was, of course, a limited attack. And what Israeli actually want from this attack is not actually to damage any Iranian infrastructure, because they know what would be the retaliation of the Iranian army and the Iranian government. They just want to show that they can actually retaliate, they can actually send their fighter jet to attack Iran. But I believe that even though this attack was limited and the damage was actually, it's something that you can't actually mention. Even though two Iranian soldiers, as it's been reported, were killed, I believe that this attack actually is still a violation of Iranian sovereignty. And I believe that Iran will retaliate to this attack because the attack of 1 October against the Zionist State of Israel, it was a retaliation against the assassination of Hamas leader Ismail Haniyeh. So it was the Israeli regime who began the attack against Iran by targeting their consulate in Damascus and then targeting Ismail Haniyeh. That's why I believe that the Iranian government and the Iranian army will actually retaliate against this attack because they should not actually let Netanyahu at least to show that he is actually won, if it was through the media and through what they are saying that the Iran might not respond, and the United States and all their media is kind of requesting the Iranian not to respond. This means that it's not about the damage. It was only that Netanyahu want to show that he can actually target Iran.
All right. Well, there's a winner that has come out of this. Ambassador Shajarian, I don't know if you agree or not, and that's not the Israeli regime, but is Iran's missile defense shield that was able to thwart and intercept the incoming missiles. That was very evidence-based on the skyline. Tell us what you think about that, because that obviously shows another area where it was not very well known, based on at least what we know of how the enemy, in this case the Israeli regime, would have anticipated, again, based on the success rate that we see here, and also that this type of defense approach and success that the defense shield had adds to the other assets that Iran's defense, doctrine and military equipment have.
Absolutely. I mean, it's short of miracle. You know, when you really look at where Iran was at the time of revolution, when the imposed war was taking place, and Iran couldn't buy barbed wire to defend itself and its soldiers and its citizens, and now it is what it is, and what we saw, all of us, last night. But I want to add one thing more. This is not just facing state of Zionist state. Iran has been standing against the whole of the West. Zionist state itself is not really that powerful, despite all that is being we hear on our Western media. The reality is that who is behind it? United States, Western leaders, not the Western people. You know, 75% of people in the West are against this war. They want it to end. But their government, which represents 15% of the people in the West, or 20%, is supporting in every possible way. Israel could not survive more than a few hours if it wasn't because of the support of the West. And what is important for us to remember right now is that it's not just Israel is scared. It's actually United States of America, with all its allies, is too scared to challenge and allow its poodle to go beyond what they did the other night. So I think that's something we need to keep into account. That the fear is not just Zionist state, but their masters as well. But also, I think what we need to also recognize is that this is, as much as it's the right, legitimate, inherible right of Iran to defend itself and to respond to this, but I think it goes one step further, and this is very important. Israel is not just danger to the Iranian people. Israel is danger to humanity. Israel, by legitimizing genocide as a means and trying to actually create a future which normalization of genocide as a tool of killing this sort of number of people, which in reality is a lot more than 40,000, that is actually what needs to be challenged on top of their aggression against Iran.
All right, I'm going to come back to you with the point that you just made, but in a different way, and see what you think about it. But I'd like to ask Hossein Abouqaiti about some of the fake news that's out there that's peddled by the Israeli regime itself and also by some Western media outlets. You're looking at things like Israel hitting 20 targets, 100 fighter jets were involved, Iran's oil refinery to have been hit, and significant damage to Iran's surface-to-surface missile production centers. And in one particular case, they even showed a picture of this area that I'm familiar with as a person, a resident of Iran, of which they showed this storage facility in an industrial park that is not made for missiles or drones. And they targeted that, and they showed that picture. Do you think that Israel was trying to magnify the attack in order to show the weakness of what was involved in the actual attack?
I mean, of course, this is actually what's happening. Israeli, through their statement and through the media, and as well media in some Arab nation who are actually loyal to the Zionist State of Israel and Western media, they will try hard to magnify it and to make this attack look, so big. But if we see on the ground, Iranian air defense was successfully determined and have stopped most of this attack. And if we actually see and compare Iran and as well the Zionist State of Israel, we know that the Zionist State of Israel depend 100% on all its military equipment and weapons on the United States. And even I believe that this attack that was conducted against Iran, if it was limited, it was as well supported by the United States. We've seen that the Israeli regime has failed actually to stop Hamas from continue targeting Israel and as well from continue fighting back, and as well Hezbollah. And we know and we see that the United States and other countries and as well Israel blame Iran for supporting those two groups. So just imagine if Iran will come to a direct war with Israel. If Israel failed to stop Hamas and Hezbollah, how can it actually be successful to stop Iran in any attack or in any war in the future? That's why what the Israeli regime have now is just to use the media to exaggerate this attack and to use. What the Israeli actually, what they are successful in all their attack in the region, they are successful in killing civilians. We've seen that in Lebanon, in Gaza, and as well against Yemen. I mean, they couldn't target any military installation in Yemen. They have targeted the port and some oil infrastructure and power station in Hodeidah. This shows that the only thing they're good at is by killing civilians and destroying, as they did in Gaza. But I still believe that even though this attack was limited, that Israeli now will actually will be concerned about what type of attack Iran will conduct against Israel, because the one who has actually started the attack against the Islamic Republic of Iran is the Zionist State of Israel. They are the one who have started the war. It's an illegal occupation. It's an illegal attack against Iran. That's why I believe that this attack that was conducted by Israeli regime is just for the media use and just to save Benjamin Netanyahu, especially after the attack of 1 October that have actually hit the Israeli regime very hard in many parts in occupied Palestine.
Well, if there was a time where the Israeli regime would think that it could just walk away now from what is a failed operation, though they perceive it to be a success, this is that time. And I told you that I would come back to you, Masoud Shajara, with the point that you made regarding how Israel is a threat to the world. But my question to you is, isn't Israel a threat to itself? In the context where you have an attack that was unsuccessful, despite the promises, the grand promises that were made by the Minister of Military Affairs, by different Israeli officials, where even now within Israel, Israeli officials, like the opposition leader Yair Lapid, saying that this was nowhere close to what Israel should have done, therefore deeming this to be unsuccessful, meaning that it now has put Israel on the back foot. It has exposed itself, that it is vulnerable. And when you have a regime that's dealing on seven fronts, as they claim that they are, which they are in essence, how weak does that pose Israel footing to be, given now this unsuccessful operation?
Well, we have all seen that Zionist state is morally bankrupt, and it has shown itself. And indeed, this is why even in the West, let alone the rest of the world, 75-80%, and the rest of the world, 90-95% of people are against it, have turned against it. Now, we are seeing, as you are rightly saying, that the Israelis, who themselves, overwhelming majority of them, are morally bankrupt, and they are motivated by hatred rather than anything else, are not turning against their own sort of infrastructure and their own leadership, because they're seeing that now they're also, on top of being morally bankrupt, they're militarily incompetent. I mean, really what happened last night shows the incompetence of this so-called huge or one of the largest military force in the world, and their incompetence in planning and even implementing it. I mean, you know, they are usually very good because they control the Western media. But what we have seen all day today is sort of mockery of their incompetence, their sort of failures in operation last night, and the cowardness. And this is something that Israeli this Zionist state citizens are seeing it and being exposed to it first time. And so on one side, from outside, I think they lost all credibility. But inside, internally, they are they lost credibility also. And I think they are going to find it very difficult to come out of this unaffected.
Indeed. Well, you know, regionally, Hossein Abu Qiti, you have all countries, without exception, that have blasted the Israeli regime to have conducted this illegal strike on the Islamic Republic. Even allies of Israel, countries like Jordan, that have come out and said, you know, what Israel did was wrong. It appears, especially after the many trips that Iran's foreign minister made to the regional countries, that none of the countries allowed Israel to use this airspace, except for Iraq, which did not allow Israel to use the airspace because of an agreement that there exists between the two, that they were unaware that the U.S. would use this area, which is, from what we understand, 100 or so kilometers from the Islamic Republic. Isn't this the time that all these regional countries, realizing that the U.S., which backs Israel, cannot take care of them or their security, that it stands to stand up to the U.S. to stop its support for the Israeli regime and to stop the destructive policies as a result of the regime by backing it?
I mean, this is exactly what's happening since October 7. The status of the United States in the region has been damaged really badly. And we've seen, as you mentioned, that many condemnation of countries, even though countries that are actually loyal to the United States and Israel or have some ties, as we say, under the table with Israel, like Saudi Arabia or as well Jordan, who have a clear ties with the Israeli, they have all condemned their attack, and some of them have said that they didn't allow the Israeli regime to use their airspace. And this is actually something new that has not happened before October 7. As an example, that United States, we know when they launched the war with the United Kingdom as the so-called Prosperity Guardian against Yemen, they couldn't actually use any airspace in the region, even though some of the largest bases they have is in Saudi Arabia, Qatar, and Bahrain. But they were not allowed to use that because they know that the Yemenis actually have threatened, and they will target those countries, they will target the U.S. asset in those countries. And as well, they will target, when they have war, they will target even the oil infrastructure and all type of infrastructure in this region. This actually has banned or not allowed those countries to join or to allow United States. This is exactly what's happening with Iran, especially after the attack of 1st of October against the Zionist State of Israel. It shows clearly to all the region and to all the nation in our region or the Middle East that Iran actually is capable to target and to hurt the Israeli regime. And it was clearly that Israeli air defense has failed miserably in stopping those attacks. That's why since October 7, I believe that now who have the upper hand is the axis of resistance. And I believe that the Israeli regime with the leadership of Netanyahu, actually they are the one who will actually hurt the Israeli regime, will destroy the Israeli regime.
Okay, we're quickly running out of time. I guess this is going to be the last question to you, Master Shajarah. You know, we have now seen the reactions come through from Iran, and the most recent one actually indicates that Iran reserves the right, obviously, to retaliate. It's within its rights. It's within its legal right to do so, and that it will carry through with with a response. In between statements that Iranian officials have made, there is an eagerness for there to be a stop to the war in the region when it comes to Lebanon and the genocidal war against the Palestinians in the Gaza Strip. Do you think that based on this failure of an attack, that that will speed up those fronts in there for there to be a solution? Because we're seeing, again, the Israeli regime, for example, on Lebanon has said, we have killed or assassinated the Hezbollah officials, therefore it's the time now to come up with a solution. And we know that ceasefire talks are going to begin tomorrow. So we're seeing a trajectory for a political solution to these crises.
Well, definitely I hope so. But I don't think we should hold our breath, because Netanyahu and his cabinet and these extremists within the extreme occupying power are a bunch of loonies, and you know, they have failed over the last year to respond positively or indeed for their own benefit. It's been only for the benefit of Netanyahu to keep him out of jail. So leaving that caveat to one side, but what is really has happened over the last year, we have seen the unpopularity of the Zionist state occupying apartheid genocidal loonies being lost bit by bit. And then on the other side, the axis of resistance, which I consider not just Yemen, Lebanon, Iran, Iraq, and so forth, but all those people in the West and everywhere else, which are going to demonstration and okay, say enough is enough, that is being empowered. So yes, we are working towards a solution, but I really doubt that it will happen overnight.
Thank you very much. Masoud Shajarah, Chairman of the Islamic Human Rights Commission, and thank you, Hossein Abughaiti, activist and political commentator from Sana'a. Thank you to you both. With that, we come to an end for this edition of The Spotlight. From Mikhail Batakhwei and the team, it's goodbye.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran.
We once had a teacher, the teacher of teachers. He changed the world for the better and made us better creatures.
In the name of Allah, assalamu alaikum, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio. Welcome to the program, The Teacher. Please stay with us.
What will we say in front of it? Mu'allim.
Assalamu alaikum, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio. Call of Islam page. We welcome to another episode of the program, The Teacher, an introduction into the main Islamic teachings and concepts. I am Atal, the host of this program. Within the studio are two guest speakers from the Islamic House of Qom, Brother Alavian and Sheikh Rouhani. Sheikh Rouhani, assalamu alaikum.
Alaikum assalam wa rahmatullah.
And Brother Alavian, assalamu alaikum.
Alaikum assalam wa rahmatullah.
All right, for today's episode of the program, The Teacher, we want to talk about another Islamic concept or teaching, and that is Al-Tabarruk. It is the religious practice of asking for a blessing or a request for favor and grace from Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala and holy beings. It could be also asking the holy tomb of a holy shrine or something like that. We'll explain it more. Before getting to more details, Brother Alavian, give us a definition of Tabarruk. What is it exactly?
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. May Allah's peace and blessings be upon the Holy Prophet of Islam, Muhammad, and his purified progeny. Well, Tabarruk is a religious act of asking for a blessing or request for a favor or grace from Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. Even the Holy Prophet and other holy beings.
Yes.
So this is something that usually religious people do, not only in the Islam world, but even in other religions world as well. I mean, the followers of other religions do such a thing. I mean, they actually try to request the grace or the holiness of stuff belonging to their prophets or to the